for them for a better life. This is from one side. The other side is to cover the expensive on the new land, occupied land in Syria. They need more budget to control such big area right now. And also maybe to implement new weapon and to implement also new demonstration on such new weapon.
Mm-hmm. Well, but it's a bit odd, given that there are certain ceasefires that are put in place. But in what ways does this massive military expenditure really affect the humanitarian and political landscape of the Palestinian territories in specific and the broader region, including Lebanon, possibly Syria, possibly Yemen, and maybe Iran?
You know, now we are talking, let's say that GDP of the Israeli entity is $610 billion. And they used to spend like about 5% of their budget. Now it's increased by 3 or 4% more. I think it will affect the inside, let's say, civilian budget inside the Israeli entity. But it's it will make the military a little bit stronger. But we don't know yet how it can be, how it can have like some influence or more influence of what's going on, war on against the resistance alliance, or how it can affect on Gaza. I think it will affect like more. A new weapon, a new, more massacres, more demolition, and maybe it will be also to have more capability to stay within Gaza, or in case they want to have a new round of war.
Well, I want to talk about their internal politics a bit, but given what you just said, before we talk about the internal politics, that Zionist Israel is preparing itself. It's paying billions of dollars to prepare itself for upcoming wars. And yet you see on the other side, the Lebanese government giving concession after concession, not paying a dime to increase the capabilities of the Lebanese army. And on the other hand, they are demanding the people who have the capability to give up their weapons. How can you explain that?
Well, we have to add also to the to this budget. We are talking about the military defense budget for the Israelis, which increased by like about $10 billion for the 2026. And we don't have to forget the support of the United States and the new every year free of charge equipment that coming from Germany to support also the Israeli entity. The Lebanese army has a small budget, defense budget, and they cannot be equipped with a new weapon to fight the Israeli entity. And also, if we consider the what so-called the American aid to the Lebanese military or army, we see it's like a change only.
It's laughable. It's like they're laughing at us. It's like they're laughing at the army.
Exactly. And, you know, from this budget, they support the Lebanese army with old weapon, also old ammunition. They don't give us any military equipment that we can fight the Israeli entity with it. So they only, as Thomas Barak said,
all of that is being said, and then you have people like Tom Barak coming along to tell us in such a patronizing way that we are a failed state. And when asked, how is that even possible when you refuse to increase the capabilities of the Lebanese army and we see that the capabilities of the Israelis is increasing, he literally said that they would only help the army if they kill their own people. And then you still have the government people siding by the Americans while putting their own resistance on a red lock. What is that about?
You know, like we see that negotiations are going on now between the mechanism, two parties from Lebanon and from the Israeli entity, and supposedly the guarantor is the American General Clearfield. And we know that the Americans are the big supporter of the Israelis, and they support Israel with their offense against us.
I mean, we were bombed with U.S.-made weapons, and at some point, even American pilots took part in bombing us.
The Americans were participants, not only supporters. The Americans destroyed us with their own military, with their own, brigades that existed in the on the sea, Marines and Navy, and especially the Delta Force and Navy SEALs against Lebanon, using the U-2 and Camp Scal, and also MQ-9 and others, to and especially F-35 that been sent, exported to the Israelis off shelf from the military, American military depot ahead of time, only to destroy us. But let's say in negotiation, they want to try to make Lebanon so weak without any playing card on the table of negotiation, and to go as naked to the negotiation. They want to try to disarm Hezbollah, okay, and not to support the Lebanese army to have power to spread its authority all over the southern of Lebanon.
Well, everything you're saying is very important, but I have just one more minute and want to talk about the internal politics crisis inside of the Zionist entity, where Netanyahu's corruption trials and his appeals for foreign intervention is intersecting with Zionist Israel war-driven budget. I mean, he's begging Netanyahu for pardon. How do you think that will affect the internal Israeli politics?
I think Netanyahu, since the what's so called the 20 pounds deal with Gaza and the 1701 with Lebanon, is trying to buy time and extra time and every time extra time just to stay in power, and trying to have a special pardon from his president, but at least to declare that he was corrupt. I don't think he will do so. So he will try to buy time. Now he's adding a new budget to the military spending, and I think it will make the Israeli internal policy a little bit occupied with such dispute.
Well, I want to thank you very much, Dr. Ali Hamiyi, a military strategist and political analyst, for joining us to talk about this matter. Ladies and gents, thank you. Please do follow us to get more updates about the region of West Asia right here on the Middle East Stream. Assalamu alaikum.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. السلام عليكم ورحمة الله.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
The following is part of the speech delivered on April 27th, 2017 by Ayatollah Khamenei, the Supreme Leader of the Islamic Revolution, In a meeting with the participants of the 34th International Quran Competitions. In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. All praise is due to Allah, the Lord of the worlds, and peace and greetings be upon our Master and Prophet, Abu al-Qasim al-Mustafa Muhammad, and upon his pure and infallible household. I would like to welcome all the honorable participants, particularly the dear guests who have come from various Islamic countries and who have participated in this great Quranic program. In particular, I would like to mention university professors, judges, and Quran researchers. Also, I would like to thank the officials who organized this glorious ceremony and to manage it in the best way possible. First of all, you should know that what you have done is a great deed. Today, throughout the world of Islam, every task that is carried out for the sake of the Quran and in the direction of understanding and promoting it is one of the greatest deeds that one can imagine. Have done is a good deed. You should purify your intentions for God and you should purge them of selfish desires and various other motivations so that your actions will be accepted by God and so that you will be rewarded by Allah the Exalted. And this Quranic movement should continue in our country. We are away from the Quran. We are unfamiliar with the Quran and with Quranic concepts. We should do something in this regard. We should work so hard that Quranic concepts will turn into popular concepts and public discourses among Muslim nations and countries. By Allah's favor, I will speak about this in another opportunity. What I want to say here is that we have certain concepts in the Quran which really build a powerful and glorious life for the Islamic Ummah. They are really a source of liberation from difficulties for the Islamic Ummah. We have such concepts in the Quran. In order to implement these concepts, we should primarily instill them into Muslims' minds in Islamic societies.
Allah, I want to thank you. That you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things.
travel to a historical city, the goal is not just to visit museums and beautiful monuments, but you want to mix with the locals and learn about their traditions and culture. In recent years, many historical houses in Iran have turned to accommodation places, which are called Bumgardi. These are neither hotels nor hostels. They are local traditional houses that provide the opportunity for their guests to meet with locals and live like locals, even for a short time. Nartiti is the first house we visited, a beautiful place in the small town of Taft, with several traditional elements. An Iranian Zoroastrian couple owns the house. Traveling also means doing activities that we would not have done elsewhere. Each night, all the travelers who stay in this cozy place meet with the owners of the house, drink tea, and eat freshly picked pomegranate from the backyard. And so, they can experience a little different trip and realize that we all share the same fundamental values and same objectives. We're all part of the same planet, and this makes us stay connected.
Staying at these kinds of places adds to one's understanding of the world and understanding of people. It is something which gives you an understanding that all of us are the same. We're all people. We're much more similar than we are different. And when you start taking governments and other things out of the situation, it's just, we can enjoy being with each other and understanding each other and learning about each other.
Another differentiating element of this house is a wall full of memories of those who stayed a while in this place. A very interesting wall that takes you to a journey around the world.
Une nuit dans cette maison est particulièrement une expérience particulièrement enrichissante. Enrichissante puisque ça permet de partager ces expériences entre les différents voyageurs qui se croisent ici.
In Iran, when a guest or loved one leaves our house, we accompany him or her to the door and throw water to show we want him or her to return very soon. With this compassion, we left that beautiful place to discover other local guest houses. The second place is the House of Baran, which means rain in Farsi, a beautiful adobe house that truly represents the city of Yazd. A very simple house, but artistically decorated and perfectly designed with traditional Persian elements, that constantly reminds you of the peaceful spirit of Iranians. A beautiful house with very positive energy. There's a logic behind the location of every piece in decorating this guest house. Some of these elements are symbolic, and some others are still functional.
This house has lots of interesting features for me as a visitor. Abbas, the owner of this guest house, had to adjust the stairs and make them more comfortable for us, people of modern age, to be able to walk down. Because apparently, back in the old days, they were building these stairs very high. Underground room. There is about 15 to 20 degrees Celsius temperature difference comparing it to upstairs. So making it a perfect room to chill and maybe take a nap during the hot days of summer. Also during the cold days of winter, this is going to be a very warm room and area of the building. Few steps down and this tiny little room even gets cooler. Ideal, perfect place to keep your fruits and vegetables during the hot days of summer. Natural cooling system. You know why? Because it's connected to the wind tower room.
There is always a time to say goodbye to even the most beautiful things in this world. What you take from that location or moment is usually what you see or experience towards the end. an unforgettable taste with a beautiful color and very exciting recipe create an experience that I will take with me from Boron Guest House. The exciting thing about all these traditional guest houses is the fact that they're all different in some ways. One is famous for its traditional elements. One is known for its design and decorations. And the other has some very moving stories about the people who live there, the people who run it now, their families and their relatives, local people of different regions of Iran, full of love and passion, the most hospitable hosts that I have ever seen in my life. Jahangard Guest House is one of the few places that you can have a unique experience of meeting local elders, hear their stories, and learn about their experiences.
One of the benefits of staying at local guest houses is to have a chance to have this first-hand experience of seeing local handicrafts being made. And I really enjoy interacting with these people, talking to them, and of course learning from them.
One thing is to hear or imagine how life was back in the old days, especially inside these gorgeous traditional guest houses. Another thing is to live the life of those people in those days. It might be some very simple acts, or even sometimes symbolic, but they definitely worth the try. It feels amazing. Shahryar Azimi for Iran.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Welcome back, dear listeners. You're tuned into Iran Radio, broadcasting from the heart of Tehran. I am Masuma, and it is a pleasure to be with you this Saturday. We've got more enriching content lined up for the rest of the hour. So let's take a look at what's coming your way. Next, we'll bring you Iran Today, your gateway to in-depth coverage of key developments within the Islamic Republic of Iran, from advancement in science, technology, to updates on the economy and business sectors. This program offers exclusive insights and interviews you won't want to miss. After that, enjoy another round of radio productions. Stay tuned.
The 8-year defense of Iranian combatants.
A senior Iranian lawmaker has said,
contrary to Washington's claims, America's
President Raisi has emphasized that
U.S. sanctions have failed to extract concessions from Tehran.
Iran Today.
Iran, a place whose story is far more complex than the headlines suggest.
Over the past four decades, the country has quietly engineered one of the most dramatic transformations in public health anywhere in the world. In 1979, life expectancy in Iran was just 56 years. Today, it stands at 75, a 19-year leap. For comparison, during the same period, life expectancy in the United States rose only 3 years, and in France, 8. The numbers tell a story of rapid, determined progress, built on investment in healthcare, expanded insurance coverage, and a national push for better medical services. It's an undeniable sign of Iran's progress and capabilities in the medical field. One of the clearest indicators of a nation's health is maternal and infant mortality. Following the victory of the Islamic Revolution, as access to clinics and trained medical staff increased, Iran saw maternal deaths fall to 20 per 100,000 live births. That's less than 1% of the global rate, which stands at roughly 200 per 100,000. Specialists in obstetrics and gynecology call it one of the country's quiet medical revolutions.
Still, some critics abroad often claim that Iran is a country that is defined only by its drones and missiles. But a deeper look inside the country's scientific institutions paints a very different picture.
Mr. Mohammad Reza Kompani, CEO of a high-tech medical equipment company, outlined how Iran's medical equipment sector has expanded since the victory of the Islamic Revolution.
The medical equipment of Iran has actually been started from the revolution, after the revolution. Before that, we had only the furniture and such things and autoclave for sterilization of the goods. But after that, about 10 years after the revolution, right after the ending the war, the medical equipment started the industry in Iran. And now, which I'm here, we have about 85% of the items are required to be used in the hospitals. I'm talking about the devices, because in medical equipment, we have two parts, the devices and the sundries and the disposables we used in the hospitals. So in the medical equipment, the devices, 85% of the hospitals are doing the equipping by the Ministry of Health are provided from the local manufacturers. It's the, as you see here, it's the operation room, the ICU, CCU, the dialysis section, the emergency, and the general hospital.
Iran's global ranking in science and research has climbed to 15th. 65 Iranian universities are now counted among the world's top institutions, 22 of them in medical sciences. Many cancers once considered fatal in Iran are now routinely treatable. 97% of the medicines Iranians use are produced inside the country. And through advanced transplants from cord blood to bone marrow, Iranian physicians now treat more than 70 diseases that once required travel abroad. In an interview with us, Iranian scientist Sepide Mirzayi Varzaghani, a Mustafa Prize laureate for scientists under 40 and a leading researcher in cancer drug resistance, highlighted Iran's giant leap in advanced therapeutic technologies, particularly in the field of gene therapy.
با دانشی که داریم و اینکه در حوزه زیست پزشکی ما امروز در دنیا حرف برای گفتن داریم و
With the expertise we have today, Iran has a real voice in the global biomedical arena. We've made significant progress in advanced therapeutic technologies, especially gene therapy. If there is sustained targeted investment, Iran can definitely become a regional hub for cancer research and cancer treatment.
Four decades ago, Iran ranked 39th in global scientific output. Today, it's 18th. In medical sciences alone, Iran has climbed from 38th to 10th worldwide. The country is among the five global leaders in advanced stem cell science, second in the world in bone marrow transplantation, and among the top 10 nations in nanotechnology, biotechnology, and infertility treatment. In biotechnology, Iran is now one of only three nations producing a wide portfolio of high-tech biopharmaceuticals, including the hepatitis B vaccine, erythropoietin, multiple interferons, streptokinase, GCSF, and others. And for more than 20 years, Iran has practiced clinical cell therapy, an area where many countries remain stuck in the research stage. Stem cells are now used in corneal, cardiac, skin, and other transplants across Iranian hospitals. Ms. Mirzai also explained how her research on drug resistance in cancer led to her receiving the Mostafa Prize. The Mostafa Prize, founded in 2012, is considered one of the most prestigious science and technology awards in the Islamic world.
Can you please tell us more about your research that resulted in you receiving the Young Scientist Mostafa Prize?
پژوهش‌هایی که من انجام دادم و در واقع منجر شد به دریافت این جایزه ارزشمند.
My research, which led to this valuable award, focuses on drug resistance in cancer. I study the role of intercellular signaling pathways that cause cancer cells to become resistant to chemotherapy. These molecular pathways inside the cell play a crucial role. After several treatment cycles, they can make the patient's body less responsive to anti-cancer drugs and reduce the sensitivity of cancer cells therapy. What we're trying to do is to identify and regulate these signaling pathways. Cancer cells can activate certain pathways that, in turn, lower their sensitivity to treatment. By mapping and modulating these pathways, we aim to reduce drug resistance and restore or even increase the responsiveness of cancer cells to anti-cancer drugs.
Education has played a major part in this transformation. Iran now has nearly 70 medical universities and faculties, staffed by 22,000 faculty members.
The country's medical system hosts about 270,000 domestic students and 7,000 international students. Researchers in these institutions have authored more than 60,000 conference papers, 81,000 journal articles, and over 258,000 papers published internationally. 25 Iranian medical universities have been included in the Leiden Ranking 2025, with Tehran, Shahid Beheshti, Tabriz, Shiraz, and Iran University of Medical Sciences ranking below 500 globally. Women's enrollment in universities has also increased, and women now make up 50% of students and faculty, an important accomplishment. Many of these graduates have achieved prominent national and international positions.
Iran's push for scientific independence shows up in its pharmaceutical sector as well. For instance, 99% of medications are produced domestically.
Iran also produces 40% of its medical equipment and requires no outside technical assistance for the development of pharmaceutical formulations, something the country demonstrated during the Iran-Iraq War, the COVID-19 pandemic, and other crises. From 35 dependency-heavy drug companies in 1979, Iran has grown to more than 200 domestic pharmaceutical manufacturers today. Mr. Kompany also described how Iran weathered the COVID-19 pandemic using medical equipment supplied by domestic knowledge-based companies.
I'm telling you that for the rest of the products and the items which we have not produced yet, many, many science-based companies, which among of the 400, are working on them, and I will promise you, in about two or three next year, we will have them as well. So there is no worry about the medical equipment, as we didn't have any problem during the corona. You see, in corona, we actually expend 6,000 ICU beds for the corona patients. So this means that we had the knowledge, we had the technology, we had the units, and all of them prevent us to choose the patients from the age and etc. to take it to the ICU. So every patient which needed to go to ICU, freely they could go. Then they hadn't had any problem. So Corona was the one among the 10 to 15 countries in the world which has no problem. Iran was one of them.
Iran now ranks first in Asia in the production of recombinant medicines, drugs used to treat cancers, MS, hemophilia, and viral illnesses. Vaccination coverage for children under 5 has risen from 20% before 1979 to full nationwide coverage, even in remote villages. Iran has produced key pharmaceutical raw materials for treatments of pulmonary hypertension, coagulation disorders, and chemotherapy. It has introduced the first nanotechnology-based injectable anti-cancer drug, Sinadoxazom, among a long list of other high-tech drugs. Iran is now one of the world's top three producers of radiopharmaceuticals, about 70 varieties. These supply 230 treatment centers and 6,500 nuclear medicine units inside Iran and are exported to 15 countries, generating roughly $70 million annually. The only remaining imports are certain raw isotopes, mainly from Russia. Ms. Mirzayi also explained how combination therapies can ultimately help increase hope and survival prospects for cancer patients.
What are some of the practical and clinical applications of your research regarding the diagnosis or treatment of cancer in the near future?
اینها جزء درمان‌های در واقع درمان‌هایی که ترکیبی هستن و طراحی داروهایی که
These are part of what we call combination therapies and gene-based drug designs, treatments that combine conventional anti-cancer drugs with genetic components. They can be highly effective in preventing and overcoming drug resistance, which is one of the biggest challenges in cancer treatment. We also focus on targeting personalized therapies so that one standard drug is not prescribed for all patients. Instead, treatment is tailored to each patient's genetic profile, because even two people with, for example, lung cancer can have very different patterns of drug resistance. Designing targeted drugs for each individual can significantly improve treatment outcomes, reduce overall costs, and most importantly, increase hope for patients living with cancer.
We have a lot more to cover today, but first let's take a moment to catch up on the latest headlines.
Hello everyone, welcome to the news section of this program. Here we'll go over some important news headlines. Tehran Times: over 1,140 Iranians among world's 1% most cited researchers. A total of 1,142 Iranian researchers have been recognized among the world's top 1% most cited researchers in 2025, compared to 1,056 identified researchers in 2024, according to the Islamic World Science Citation Institute. The Ministry of Health, Treatment and Medical Education accounts for 52.77%, and the Ministry of Science, Research and Technology, with 427 researchers, represents 37.43% of the most cited Iranian researchers, ISCIIR reported. Clinical medicine with 446 entries, engineering with 209 entries, pharmacology and toxicology with 163 entries, chemistry with 140 entries, neuroscience and behavior with 115 entries, agriculture sciences with 100 entries, and social sciences with 77 entries held the highest shares of the most cited researchers. Three Iranian researchers have been among the highly cited award recipients. IRNA, Iran among top 20 countries in medical science output, ISC. Iran ranks among the top 20 countries in terms of medical science publications, indexed in the Scopus and Web of Science databases in 2023, according to figures from the Islamic World Science Citation Center. Given the importance of the health and medical fields and the advancements made by Iran in these areas, the ISC has prepared a report on the scientific and technological outputs in this sector, as well as on the most cited researchers and the global rankings of Iranian medical universities, ISC head Ahmad Fazlzadeh said on Saturday. Fazlzadeh pointed out that in comparison of different subject areas and the Web of Science databases, Iranian medical and health researchers have 158,678 documents in their names and the second highest scientific output from the country after engineering, technology, and natural sciences. ISNA, Iran among top three in radiopharmaceuticals, expands nuclear scanners nationwide. Iran has established its position as one of the world's top three producers of radiopharmaceuticals, with statistics showing a nationwide increase in nuclear medicine imaging systems across all 31 provinces, according to reports. Radiopharmaceuticals technology, one of the major achievements of modern medicine, has driven significant advancements in diagnosing and treating complex diseases such as cancer over recent decades. Currently, Iran produces 70 types of radiopharmaceuticals, meeting the needs of more than 6,500 nuclear medicine centers nationwide. The country also exports these products to 15 countries, generating around $70 million in revenue in 2025. As part of efforts to achieve self-sufficiency, a cyclotron has been installed and commissioned at a hospital in Tehran to produce radioisotopes used in PET imaging. Mehr, Iran ranks 17th in world in science production, Minister. Iran's Minister of Science, Research and Technology, Hossein Simoisarov, says that Iran is ranked 17th in the world in terms of production of the scientific articles. He made the remarks on the sidelines of the cabinet session on November 12th, where he emphasized that the country is at the 17th rank in the world in the field of science production. The minister promised that his ministry would take effective steps to promote the level of science production on the regional and international stage. And thank you for joining us in this section. Please do stay tuned for the main narrative.
Medical tourism has become another thriving industry. In 2024, nearly a million patients from 160 countries traveled to Iran for treatments ranging from infertility and cosmetic surgery to cardiac care, ophthalmology, and organ transplantation.
Diako Abbasi, Secretary of the Health Tourism Council, explained how Iran has become a destination for health tourism.
Iran,
Over the past two decades, Iran has become one of the leading health tourism destinations in the region and even the world. This growth stems from our scientific and technological progress in medicine, the strong expertise of Iranian doctors in diverse specialities, Iran's strategic location near countries with serious healthcare challenges, and our shared cultural background and long medical tradition. All of this has helped make Iran a distinctive and attractive destination for health tourism.
The country also maintains one of the region's largest research networks, with 849 medical research centers. These laboratories fuel Iran's growing scientific partnerships abroad and boost its presence in global health diplomacy.
We currently have around 300 hospitals licensed to provide international health services, fully capable of admitting foreign patients at a professional level. Their staff receive cross-cultural training, and they have dedicated international patient departments that operate under official authorization. In addition, there are about 700 active health tourism offices and companies that handle medical visas as well as patients' accommodation, transfers, and specialized guidance during their stay.
In ophthalmology, Iranian hospitals offer services on par with the most advanced nations. The country no longer sends patients abroad for eye care. Instead, patients from neighboring countries come to Iran for surgery due to lower costs, modern equipment, and highly trained surgeons.
سال گذشته ما از حدود 140 کشور
Last year, our medical centers admitted foreign patients from around 140 countries, which shows just how strong and promising Iran's health tourism market is. Most international patients come from cardiology and cardiovascular surgery, orthopedics, infertility treatment, transplants, ophthalmology, and ENT procedures such as cochlear implants, as well as cosmetic and general surgeries. They travel from countries like Iraq, Afghanistan, Turkmenistan, the Persian Gulf states, even Saudi Arabia, as well as European countries such as the UK and Germany. We've also received patients from countries like India and even from the United States and Australia. Our data clearly show that Iran is now treating patients from across the world.
Before the victory of the Islamic Revolution, more than 11,000 Iranians were sent abroad each year for medical care. Today, the flow has reversed. The country has performed over 50,000 kidney transplants, around 7,000 heart transplants, and 225 pediatric heart transplants. Every month, roughly 80 million medical services are delivered across the country. In recent years, Iran has also joined the list of medical equipment exporters. Officials announced at the Iran Health 2025 exhibition that Iranian-made medical technology is now shipped to more than 60 countries. More than 17,000 medical technologies have been registered inside Iran, and many are already on the global market. From vital sign monitors and defibrillators to dental and laboratory equipment, as well as precision surgical tools. Mr. Kompani also elaborated on the export of Iranian medical equipment products.
As we are meeting all the standards, international standards of the medical equipment for our product, as the MOH has based on that. So we now have a very good quality devices and also the disposables in the country. So we have no problem for that, and we are exporting about to 40 countries, and we are earning a lot of money among this exporting. And also, we have our own production line in different countries, and by doing the rebranding, by the cooperation of the local agents and our companies in Iran, we have about in countries like Indonesia, Turkey, Iraq, Sweden.
About 65% of Iran's medical device industry is powered by knowledge-based companies, many of which born in universities and science parks. This pipeline of engineers and researchers has allowed Iran to develop high-tech devices such as AI-enhanced MRI machines, portable imaging units, and remote patient monitoring systems.
And there we have the Iranian ICU, which we have the ventilator, the special beds, the patient care monitoring system, and the gas supply. And as I told you during the corona, all this set was equipped from the local manufacturer, so we didn't have problem. And the price was very attractive because at the corona, many countries has to pay 10 times, 8 times of the real price of the ventilator. But here, this unit was given to the MOH for 7,000 euro. But we had many offers from other companies, like 50,000, 70,000, 40,000, different prices. But 6,000 of this unit was bought for only at the price of the 7,000 euro, which was very good. And now, the real price in the world is about 10 to 12 thousand euro.
exports of medical equipment surpassed $500 million in 2024 and are projected to reach about $650 million by the end of 2025. West Asian and African countries are the largest buyers. The appeal: Iranian devices typically cost 30 to 40% less than their European counterparts, but offer comparable precision and reliability.
The quality is very good because they are meeting all the standards, international standards, and of course the price. For example, this operation room, the general operation room you see here, if you want to buy from a top brand company, European or American, you have to pay at least $200,000 to $300,000 US. But here you can get it for $70,000 US. So you see the different price.
And is it the same quality? So
it is.
You get the same quality, but for a lower price.
Of course, of course. This is our advantage to entering to the market in international markets. So by having the people outside to cooperate with us, we will very soon will be anywhere in the world for the manufacturing of medical equipment and rebranding it.
Years after the victory of the Islamic Revolution, Iran's healthcare system continues to grow. Through decades of expansion, from hospitals and clinics in major cities to health centers in the most remote villages, the promise of equitable healthcare has been largely realized. And for millions of people across the country, that promise has become a lived reality. That's all for today. Until next time, take care.
Join us in this journey. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. English Radio.
Welcome back, dear listeners of Iran Radio. Thank you for staying with us throughout the day. As the hours unfold, we're pleased to bring you more thoughtful and engaging programs. Let's begin with news this hour, bringing you the latest headlines and major developments from across the globe. Following the news, we continue with a fresh segment of radio productions, a curated selection of enriching audio pieces, thoughtfully prepared to enhance your listening experience. Then it's time for A to Z of Life with Sister Zainab James. This inspiring.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Hamas says Israel's retroactive approval of 19 settlements marks a dangerous shift that reduces Palestinian land to colonial spoils. A fresh batch of Epstein photos features Donald Trump and other major figures tied to the late sex trafficker. And the U.S. admiral who oversaw the controversial boat strikes in Latin America is out, retiring 2 years early. Live from Tehran, I am Bahman Nouri, and this is News. The United Nations General Assembly has passed a resolution demanding Israel open humanitarian access to Gaza and respect UN premises, intensifying global debate over the conflict. The resolution submitted by Norway and more than a dozen states won support from 139 countries, while 19 abstained and 12 opposed, including the regime's main supporter, the US. Norway's ambassador, Merete Field Brattestad, warned that civilians are paying the highest price as humanitarian principles erode. The resolution follows an International Court of Justice opinion outlining Israel's obligations as an occupying power. The UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres recently condemned Israel's unauthorized entry into UNRWA's Sheikh Jarrah compound, calling it a violation of UN premises. Activist and political analyst John